Hi, this is Vikas Dubey, BA Part 2 Faculty of Social Science. Now we are going to study the next poet of the poetry, Alexander Pope. First of all, introduction about Alexander Pope. Introduction. If Pope be not a poet, where is poetry to be found? Dr. Johnson. Alexander Pope has rightly been regarded as the child of his age. William Hazlitt wrote about him, Pope was the poet not of nature but of art. Life history. Alexander Pope was born in 1688 in London of a respectable businessman's family. His parents were Romantic Catholics. And in those days, almost all the public schools were set against Roman Catholics. His early education took place in a Roman Catholic school. At times, he was put under the charge of priests who taught him Latin and Greek. Pope was a serious student of the classics. He read and digested much of his age and phase and presented a new realm through his poetry. The age which Alexander Pope belonged is better known as the age of prose and reason. When he was born, the great glorious revolution 1688 had taken place. Pope was more or less affected by that. Thus, Pope was a scholar of classicism as well as of the age in which he lived. The works which were done by him no doubt represent the age. He died on May 13, 1744. The works of Pope. Alexander Pope was a very keen student. He began to write poetry when he was nearly 12 years old. Pope's poetic career can be divided into three parts. The first period. The second period lasts from 1704 to 1730. The more important works of this period are, first, the Pastorals, second, Windsor Forest, third, Essay on Criticism, fourth, The Rape of the Lock, fifth, some minor poems, The Temple of Fame, The Messiah, etc. The second period. The second period, extending from 1730 to 1725, is the period of the great Homer translations. The translation of the Iliad was begun in 1770 and was completed by 1720. The Odyssey appeared in 1725 and 1726. It was translated with the help of two classical scholars, Fenton and Broom. The two translations were perfectly successful and brought Pope immense wealth and property. There are some other works of this period. They are an edition of Shakespeare and then the Dunciad. The third period, the last and the greatest period of poetic output of Pope from 1725 to 1740. May also be called the Horatian period. The masterpieces of this great period are Moral Essays, The Essay on Man, The Imitation of Horace and The Epistle to Dr. Arbuthnot. See two Douglasses entitled 1738. Pope as a poet. Alexander Pope has been regarded as one of the master poets of England, and he has been given the place near Shakespeare and Milton by most of the English critics. To know the theme and thought, philosophy and ideology of Pope, it is very necessary to know the mind of the age and phase in which he lived. There is no doubt the age of Pope is preeminently age of prose and reason. There is a remarkable development of prose in history, theology, politics, philosophy, and scientific research. In such environment, the great poet Pope reveals some new epochs and presents the age in a satirical manner. Pope is a great satirist in the English poetic world. His The Rape of the Lock is the best example of a satire. He ridicules here and there the follies of the time. As John Dennis points out, his careful workmanship often makes his satirical touches more attractive than Dryden's. None could excel him in his vivid portraits of the people he depicted. Pope as the child of his age. Pope is the poet who represents the early 18th century. The literary characteristics of the age is emphasized on wit and good sense. A genius for satire, a regard for correctness, and the avoidance of extremes, the poets are not inspired by passion or enthusiasm. Wit takes precedence over imagination. Nature is concealed by artifice. It was an age of prose and reason, and even the poetry of the age is prosaic. The themes too are prosaic criticism, moral philosophy and satire, which require critical analysis and discussion. Pope uses all these, so the critics call him the most correct of English poets. As Dr. Johnson says, Pope wrote for his age. His Essay on Man presents the current ethical code. His satire threw a flood of light not only on the characters of the posters of Greek but also on the decline of educational and literary standards and on the pedantry and corruption in high places. As Leslie Stephen says, no other poet reflects so clearly and completely the spirit of his own days as Pope. Pope is a keen observer of his age. He beholds his surroundings and the city life of London. He presents the fashionable upper strata of London society. How the beautiful women of this period decorate themselves before going to a club or a coffee house, and how they play the game. All the modern passions have been represented by him in his great satire, The Rape of the Lock. Pope's philosophy of poetry is, as he himself says in his poem Essay on Criticism, "First follow nature and your judgment frame by her just standard, which is still the same." Pope is a poet of reason and wit. He thinks about the subject and then he gives his judgment as he writes in his poem Essay on Man, "The proper study of mankind is man." Thus, the theme and thought of Alexander Pope is no doubt very acute to proper for life. He lacks ethics and morality in life. He wants to present the powerful and peaceful life. As he writes in Ode on Solitude, "Thus let me live unseen unknown, thus unlamented let me die. A steel from the world, not a stone, shall tell where I lie." Now, the art, diction and style of Alexander Pope. Alexander Pope is great for his correctness. The art of his poetry is the best. No poet presents the art of expression as good as Pope. The language which he uses is orderly and balanced, and the thought logically developed and well arranged. He thinks much and chooses the word properly. There is no doubt that he selects the words carefully. Every word has its own beauty. There is an example: "No place is sacred, nor the church is free. Even Sunday signs no Sabbath day to me." Here the words which have been used by him give clear idea to the readers. So far as Pope's style is concerned, it is balanced and correct. He is the master of epigrammatic style. It is quotable and can easily be memorized. Probably no poet, says Edmonds, with the exception of Shakespeare, has enriched our language so much with quotable and readily remembered saying. There are some examples. Too air is human, forgive divine. Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. Thus, Alexander Pope is truly a great poet, though there are many critics who lay blame upon him that he is not poetic but prosaic, because he cannot be sung. But it is old thought. If we read his poetry deeply, we shall find that there are grave philosophies and ideologies of his own age. So we can say that Pope is one of the greatest poets of English literature. His position cannot be challenged. Now, the next topic of the about Alexander Pope. What is heroic couplet? Or give the characteristics of Pope's couplets. The heroic couplet consists of two iambic pentameters, line of 10 syllable, rhyming together. The following is an example. We think our fathers fools, so wise we grow. Our wiser sons, no doubt we think us so, Pope. It is called heroic because 10-syllable iambic verse, whether it rhymes or not, is the usual form for epic verse in English, involving a pause at the end of every line and the completion of the sentence at the end of the couplet. Before we explain the characteristics of heroic couplet, it is very necessary to know its history. Its history. The heroic couplet was first used in England by Chaucer, who probably derived it from older French verse. Many of his Canterbury Tales are related in heroic couplets. He was followed by Spenser. The Elizabethans used it with equal skill in their poetry and drama. Like Shakespeare and Ben Jonson, Dryden used it with a great force, and he to retain much of the freedom and flexibility of the earlier matters. So far as Alexander Pope is concerned, it is said by Tillotson that he regards the heroic couplet as if they were stanzas self-contained. The characteristics of Pope's couplet. The chief characteristics of Pope's use of the couplet may be summed up as follows. A. Pope's couplet are closed, that is to say, the sense does not run from one couplet to another. The sense is complete. B. In each couplet, the caesura or pause is placed exactly in the middle, after the fourth syllable and before the sixth. The caesura is not varied, and this results in monotony. See, there is no splitting of couplet as in Dryden and others. Pope never splits his couplets. He makes each of them a separate unit by itself. D. At the end, there is generally a single rhyme. Very rarely he uses two syllables at the end. E. Pope's couplets are well polished, refined and correct. They are mostly epigrammatic and easily memorable. As Swift says, Pope can fix in one couplet more sense than I can do in six. F. Pope does not make use of Alexandrine line of 12 syllables and triplets. There is no looseness. Each couplet stands by itself and is well balanced and compact. Now we are going to record the first poem of the Alexander Pope, An Essay on Man. First of all, the summary of the poem. In the present poem, An Essay on Man, the poet Alexander Pope expresses his idea about the nature of man. According to him, a man should not accept that God will examine them. It is because man himself studies man and mankind. Man is placed in the middle position of the two extremes. On the one hand, people consider him to be really wise, while on the other hand, he does not believe to be a great man. The skeptics believe that the knowledge of nature of things is not fully possible for a man. So, it is better to leave the decision on this subject. On the other hand, Stoics accept that virtue is the best thing and pains is the cause of gloominess. Man always lives in doubt whether he should be active or inactive. He should give importance to the body or to wisdom, whether he has taken birth only to die or live. He has been given the blessing of knowledge, yet it is natural of him to do the wrong. A man has knowledge and ignorance both. He is thoughtful and passionate. He is controller as well as controlled and is the master as well as the prey. He knows truth, yet he commits wrong. Many times he is deceived by himself, by his own passion. He is the wonder of the world. He is also the fun and paradox of the world too. Hindi Saransh. Prastut Kavita Mano Par Nibandh ke antargat Kavi Alexander Pope apna vichar vyakt karte hue kehta hai ki manushya ko yah nahi samajhna chahiye ki Ishwar uski pariksha lega. Yah isliye कि मनुष्य स्वयं मनुष्य एवं मानवता के बारे में अध्ययन करता है. मनुष्य दो धाराओं के मध्य में खड़ा है. एक ओर मनुष्य स्वयं को वास्तव में बुद्धिमान मानता है, तो दूसरी ओर वह अपने को महान नहीं मानता. संदेहवादी विश्वास करते हैं कि प्रत्येक वस्तु के तत्व गुण मनुष्य को जानना संभव नहीं है, अतः उसे निर्णय लेना छोड़ देना चाहिए. एक मनुष्य अपने को गुणों का ज्ञाता मानता है, तो दूसरी ओर बैरागी समुदाय के लोग मानते हैं कि गुण ही सर्वश्रेष्ठ है और दुख अंधकार एवं उदासीनता का कारण है. मनुष्य सदा ही संदेह में रहता है कि वह सक्रिय रहे या निष्क्रिय, वह अपने को देवता समझे या जानवर, वह शरीर को महत्व दे या ज्ञान को. क्या वह मात्र मरने के लिए पैदा हुआ है? उसे ज्ञान का आशीर्वाद प्राप्त है, फिर भी गलत करना उसका स्वभाव है. एक मनुष्य ज्ञान और अज्ञानता दोनों ही रखता है. वह मननशील एवं भावनात्मक दोनों ही है. वह वैसे ही नियंत्रक है जैसे मालिक अपने शिकार पर नियंत्रण रखता है. वह सत्य जानता है फिर भी गलत करता है. अनेक बार वह अपने द्वारा ही भावनाओं में बहकर धोखा खाता है. वह संसार का आश्चर्य है, उसमें मनोरंजन और विरोधाभास दोनों ही समाहित है. Now, the theme and thought, ideology and philosophy of the poem. The present poem, Essay on Man, is a long poem of Alexander Pope. These lines have been taken from the second epistle of the poem. According to the poet, the life of man is full of conceit. There are contradictions and paradoxes in human nature. So he writes, Know then thyself, presume not God to scan. The proper study of mankind is man. So he wants to say that a man should know what he really is. There is a great contradiction in him, whether he is wise or he does not possess any sign of being great. Pope further writes that there are many schools who think differently. The main of skeptic school believe that it is not possible for a man to know every nature of all things, so he should not give in his judgment on any subject. Describing the nature of man, Pope writes, he hangs between, in doubt or to act or rest, in doubt to deem himself a god or beast. There is another school that is called the Stoic school. They believe in virtue. The psychology of man is hard to understand because he cannot decide what he should do or what he should not. There is a great confusion in his life. He does not know what has more importance, body or virtue. He does not know why he has been given birth or why he has come on the earth. Being more philosophical, Pope says that man has been given knowledge, wisdom and wit, yet it is his nature to do wrong. Lastly, he points out that it is his passion which misleads him from time to time, and he has been deceived by it even having knowledge and wit. Thus, Pope wants to say that life of man is fully paradoxical. He is full conceit. God has given him birth and also has supplied him with wit and knowledge, yet he does wrong due to his own blind passion. Now, the style, diction, rhyme, figures and art. There is no doubt the style of the poem is superb. It is deductive, philosophic and full of reasons. The poem is epigrammatic and many lines are quotable. For example, created half to rise and half to fall, great lord of all things, yet a prey to all. Though the poem is written in a prosaic language, yet it is musical and easy to remember. The style is logical and effective. The diction of the poem is effective, correct and full of meaning. Every word has been chosen in such a way that presents a new skill of writing. There is an example of setting the words, the glory, jest and riddle of the word. Look at the beauty of the line. It is strange and brings a buoyancy in the mind like a guitar. The correctness of the word are quotable. A figure of speech is used not only for using the figures but to present the figurative philosophy and thought. The rhyming of the poem is of a couplet. The art is fantastic. It has mind and art both. If one wants to look at the fantastic art in English literature, he must read Essay on Man. There is science, there is art, there is heaven, there is hell, and there is man too. Now, the explanations with reference to the context of stanzas of poem. The first stanza of the poem. Know, then thyself presume not God to scan. The proper study of mankind is man, placed on this isthmus of a middle state, a being darkly wise and rudely great, with too much knowledge for the sceptic sight, with too much weakness for the stoic's pride. He hangs between in doubt to act or rest, in doubt to deem himself a god or beast, in doubt his mind or body to prefer, born but to die, and reasoning but to err. Reference. These lines have been taken from the poem Essay on Man, composed by one of the greatest English poets, Alexander Pope. Context. In these particular lines, the poet Pope expresses his idea about the value and validity of man. According to him, a man should know what he really is. For him, to know thyself should be the aim of life. Now, explanation. Here, the poet says that for a man, it is very necessary that he should know what he really is, what is his gravity and grandeur, what he should do and what he should not do. he must not suppose that God would provide an examination of man's peculiarities. So, he further says that, to know the characteristics of man, he must study himself. He is the main subject himself, like an isthmus. He is placed in between the two streams. There is a great confusion in him whether he is really wise or not. He is not fully conscious of himself. In this regard, there are two schools of philosophy. The first school is called the school of skeptics. They believe that the knowledge of nature of things cannot be formed by man, and so he should not give his decision on such objects. On the other hand, there is a school of Stoics. They believe that virtue is the best thing, and suffering should be treated indifferently. Man always lives in doubt whether he must act or must remain passive. Whether he is a good or an animal, in fact, in a man there is the quality of good, the quality of God, and on the other hand there is the quality of devil. He should be sensual or intellectual. It is very strange that a man is born and also he dies. He possesses knowledge and strength. Even then, he makes mistakes. Thus, Alexander describes very beautifully the nature and quality of man. He presents the main contradictions of man's nature. Now, the next stanza of the poem. Alike in ignorance, his reason such, whether he thinks too little or too much. Chaos of thought and passion, all confused, still by himself abused or disabused, created half to rise and half to fall, great lord of all things, yet a prey to all, soldiers of truth in endless error hurled, the glorious jest and riddle of the world. Reference will be same. Context: in these particular lines, the poet Alexander Pope expresses his idea about the nature and quality of man. According to him, it is very difficult to define what man should do or what he should not do. It is because the life of man is full of contradictions. Now, explanation. Man is placed between two contradictions. He possesses knowledge and ignorance both. Yet, he is surrounded in confusion of thought and passion. He has to make a constant struggle. He is not able to decide that he should follow the path of knowledge or the path of desires. He is full of many confusions. He is surrounded by his strong desires. He can gain profit by his knowledge and thoughts. Man is created by God only to rise above his circumstances. Yet, individually, he falls a prey to those very things due to human weaknesses. Though he is the absolute judge to know the truth, yet he commits endless errors. Truly, man is a peculiar creature, a wonder, a glory, a fun, and a puzzle of the world. His nature is too complicated to be understood. He is so full of contradictions that he is in fact a mystery. Thus, the poet Alexander Pope presents a very vivid idea about the nature and quality of man. According to him, a man has all the power to judge. Yet, he does many mistakes. This is the very great secret of his ease, of his life. Thank you. Now, the next poem of the Alexander Pope, Ode on Solitude. First of all, the summary of the poem. In the present poem, Ode on Solitude, the poet Alexander Pope expresses his idea about the character of a happy man. According to him, the life of a happy man possesses some special types of needs. Here, he describes the quality of a happy man. That man is really very happy, whose sole anxiety is merely to cultivate a few acres of paternal land. Whatever he has, he is happy with that. He does not want any more than his needs. A happy man never depends on others. He gets his daily needs from his own fields. He is fully satisfied at his birthplace. He gets his bread and butter from his own land. His cattle give him milk, and he gets his dress from his sheep. In the hot season, he gets shadow from the tree of the field, and to get warmth, he burns his own woods in winter, which he gets from his field. The problems of the world never trouble him. He spends his life happily. He enjoys perfect health. He has mental peace. He lives peacefully in the day and sleeps soundly in the night. There is a good balance between study and rest in his life. His recreations are sweet and innocent. The poet further says that he wants to spend such a life that he may not be seen by anyone. He also warns that he should not be known by anyone. He wants to live peacefully and wants to be away from the meddling crowd. He has a wish that on his death nobody may lament or weep. He does not want that any stone on his grave should tell about where he is buried. Hindi Sharans Prastut Kavita एकांत पर गीत के अंतर्गत कवि अलेक्जेंडर पोप अपने विचार प्रसन्न व्यक्ति के संबंध में प्रस्तुत करता है। उनके अनुसार सुखी व्यक्ति के जीवन में कुछ विशेष आवश्यकताएं हैं। यहाँ वह सुख व्यक्ति के विशेषताओं को प्रस्तुत करता है। वह आदमी वास्तव में सुखी जीवन व्यतीत करता है जिसको मात्र इतना ही दुख है कि उसे अपनी कुछ पैतृक भूमि में खेती करना है। जो कुछ उसके पास होता है उसमें ही वह प्रसन्न है। वह अपनी आवश्यकता से अधिक नहीं चाहता। एक सुखी व्यक्ति कभी दूसरे पर निर्भर नहीं होता। वह अपनी दैनिक आवश्यकताओं को अपने खेत से प्राप्त कर लेता है। वह अपने जन्म स्थल पर ही संतुष्ट रहता है। वह अपने भोजन को अपने खेत से प्राप्त कर लेता है। उसके जानवर उसे दूध देते हैं और वह अपना वस्त्र अपने भेड़ों से प्राप्त कर लेता है। गर्मी के दिनों में वह अपने खेत के पेड़ों से छाया प्राप्त करता है और जाड़े में वह अपने खेत के लकड़ियों को जलाता है। संसार की समस्याएं उसे परेशान कभी नहीं करती। वह अपना जीवन आनंद से व्यतीत करता है। उसका स्वास्थ्य अच्छा रहता है। उसे मानसिक शांति रहती है। वह दिन में शांति से रहता है और रात्रि में शांति से सोता है। उसके अध्ययन और आराम में अच्छा संतुलन है। उसका मनोरंजन अच्छा है और निर्दोष भी है। कवि आगे कहता है कि वह ऐसा जीवन व्यतीत करना चाहता है कि वह किसी के द्वारा देखा ना जाए। वह चाहता है कि उसे कोई जाने नहीं। वह शांति से रहना चाहता है और भीड़ से दूर रहना चाहता है। उसकी यह इच्छा होती है कि उसके मरने पर कोई ना दुखी हो ना कोई रोए। वह चाहता है कि उसकी कब्र पर उसकी किसी बात के बारे में कोई पत्थर ना लगाया जाए। Now, the theme, thought, ideology, and philosophy of the poem. In the present poem, Ode on Solitude, the poet Alexander Pope presents a vivid and organic picture of the characteristics of a happy man. According to him, that a man is fully happy, who is independent and who is free from all the chains, as he writes, happy the man whose wish and cure a few paternal acres bound contain to breathe his native air in his own ground. The theme and thought of the poem is very clear. A happy man is he who has no desire and he is fully free from all the worldly bonds. A happy man is that who works in his own paternal fields and whose daily needs are fulfilled and he is fully independent. A man who is contented by doing his own labor. The ideology and philosophy of the poem is very fine. Here, the poet presents a very good outlook of life and tells how a man can lead his life peacefully. He wants to say that a happy man is self-sufficient. He has no worldly anxieties. He spends his days peacefully and has no such desires that he cannot satisfy by himself. In winter or summer, he has his comfort. In winter, he burns tree wood, and in summer, he sits in the shadow of his tree. The poet wants to live in full solitude. He wants to go away from this world unlamented. He does not want even a stone on his grave to tell where he lies. He writes himself, "Thus let me live unseen, unknown, thus unlamented, let me die. Steal from the world and not a stone should tell where I lie." Thus, the poet wants full renunciation from all worldly weal and woe, and wants to spend his life peacefully. A happy man does not want any type of crowd. He wants to live in solitude. The style and diction, figures, rhyme and art. The style of the poem, Ode on Solitude, is fantastic. It is a pond in the midst of a fully deserted land. As it is known, the age of prose and reason presents only prosaic waves, yet the present poem gives a different type of glimpse to the readers. The style is deductive and descriptive. Here, the poet presents his deep thinking as to how a man can lead his life peacefully. He writes himself, "Sound sleep by night, study and ease, together mixed, sweet recreation and innocence, which most does please with meditation." Pope has been considered as one of the masters of epigrammatic style. Here, in the present poem, he presents this style very carefully. He writes, "Thus let me live unseen, unknown, thus unlamented let me die. Steal from the world and not a stone should tell where I lie." The diction of the poem is very appropriate and correct. The poet chooses every word very seriously, and every word has its own importance. It is full of meaning, mostly monosyllabic and dissyllabic. Words have been used. There is an example of his choosing the words: "Whose herds with milk, whose fields with bread, whose flocks supply him with attire, whose trees in summer yield him shade in winter fire." If we look at the above stanza, we find the beauty of his art of choosing the words. Every word has its full meaning and presents a new thought. Thus, the diction of the poem is proper and influences the mind and heart of the readers. So far as the figures of the poem are concerned, there are alliteration, metaphor, apostrophe, personification, etc. Every figure brings a lot of buoyancy in the heart and mind of the readers. The rhyming form of the poem is A-B-A-B-A-A-B. As one can see, the last word of every alternate line, care, bound, air, ground. Though the syllables of every line are not the same, rhymed together, yet the poem is lyrical. Lastly, the art of the poem is superb. Either on the part of thought or the art. On the either side, the poem Ode on Solitude is fully successful. Now, the explanations of the stanza with reference to the context. Now, first stanza of the poem. Happy the man whose wish and care a few paternal acres bound, content to breathe his native air in his own ground. Reference: these lines have been taken from the poem Ode on Solitude, composed by the well-known poet Alexander Pope. context. In these particular lines, the poet Pope expresses his idea about the characteristics of a happy man. According to him, a happy man is that who has no suffering and pains, and who is fully free from all the bondage of life and works for his own life in his paternal fields. Now, explanation. Here the poet presents some definite characteristics of a happy man. According to him, he is really a happy man whose all desires and worries are confined to a few acres of paternal land, which is sufficient for satisfying his needs. He is content to breathe the native air. Here, the poet wants to say that man is fully happy who has limited desires and needs. He has not worry for worldly temptations. Now, the next stanza of the poem. Whose herds with milk, whose fields with bread, whose flocks supply him with attire, whose trees in summer yield him set in winter fire. Reference will be shame. Context. In these particular lines, the poet Pope expresses his idea about the life of a happy man. According to him, a happy man is that whose wishes are very limited and who has no dependence on any other person. Explanation. Here the poet expresses his idea about a happy man. To the poet, a happy man is self-sufficient. He is fully independent and he has all the needs satisfied which are necessary to live as a man. His cattle supply him with milk. He cultivates his field to produce the harvest for himself. So far as his clothes are considered, he gets wool from his lambs, herds, and makes his dress. In the summer season, he takes rest in the shadow of the trees, and in the winter season, he burns the wood of his trees to enjoy the warmth. Thus, a happy man has all possible things which are necessary for a man to live peacefully, bread and butter. He gets from his field and herds, and he gets his dress from his lambs. So he has no anxieties in his life and leads his life peacefully and happily. Now, the next stanza of the poem. Blessed who can unconcernedly find hours, days, and years slide soft away in health of body, peace of mind, quiet by day. Reference will be same. Context. In these particular lines, the poet Pope expresses his idea about the characteristics of a happy man. According to him, a happy man is that who has no dependence on any other man. He has fields for food, he has herds for milk, and lambs for wool and dress. Thus, he has all the things which are necessary for a man. He is fully independent. Explanation. Here, the poet wants to say that the man is fully happy who has no problems and pains in the life. The sufferings of his life are away from him. He is happy because he is fully free from worldly anxieties. He passes his time without any hindrance of life. There is peace and prosperity. He enjoys all joys in his life. As he works in his field and he gets milk from his cows and herds, he has no worldly problems, so he bears a good health and has peacefully mind. Thus, a happy man possesses all the things which are necessary to lead a happy life. So he has good health and possesses a healthy body and peaceful mind. Now, the next stanza of the poem. Sound sleep by night, study and ease, together mixed sweet recreation and innocence, which must displease with meditation. Refrain will be shame. Context: in these particular lines, the poet Pope expresses his idea about happy man. According to him, a happy man is that who has no care and suffering in the life. To him, a man who has some fields to plow and some herds to get the milk and who is not dependent on any other man is really a very happy man. Explanation: here the poet says that a happy man is that who sleeps peacefully in the night without worries. This idea of the poet is very appropriate to his own age. It is because the man of that age was too busy in getting and spending. He had no time to take rest. Even in the night he could not sleep due to the problems of the life. But a happy man sleeps in the night very peacefully. His life is fully peaceful. He possesses sweet recreation in his life. Thus, a happy man can sleep in the night without worries about the problems and enjoys the life happily. Now, the last stanza of the poem. Thus, let me live unseen, unknown, thus unlamented, let me die. A steel from the world and not a stone tell where I lie. Reference will be shame. In these context, in these particular lines, the poet Alexander Pope expresses his idea about his own feelings of life after telling many vivid and valuable characteristics of a happy man. He tells how he wants to spend his own life. Here the poet wants to reveal his own views of life. Explanation: here the poet wants to say that he also wants to be free from all the problems and hindrances of the life. He wants to live fully alone. He does not want that he should be seen by anyone. He wants to live in solitude. He wants to go away from this world unlamented. He does not want even a stone on his grave to tell where he is buried. These lines are very appropriate and so the renunciation of the world. The lines are very philosophical and figurative. Here the poet reveals his own deep feeling. He has really been pinched by his own age. So he wants to spend his life in such a way that he cannot be disturbed by anyone. Thank you. This is the end of poems of Alexander Pope.